A wonderful good morning. I hope you had an exciting dinner last night. We had the breakfast meeting this morning. As I said yesterday, short summaries of the meetings will be put on the Council's website. The first topic we have on the agenda for today is future of corporate reporting. That's a topic we've been dealing with a number of times over the last few years. Both elements of it, the digital reporting element in particular, we were discussing a lot around XBRL, but always tried to move that discussion away from a mere technical discussion. And at the same time, discussing around sustainability reporting, integrated reporting. Because more and more, financial reporting gets one element of a bigger set of corporate reporting. And that's why we put the topic on the agenda of today again, purposely together, so trying to touch both aspects of it, the digital side and the integrated sustainability reporting side. We will have a presentation by Christy and Alan. After that, I would open it for short questions, but not to start the discussion, but rather any questions related to the presentation. And then we would go into breakout session on that. Alan, Christy?
Great. Thanks, Christopher. Also, while it's unfortunately left off the list, is Andy Woodcroft over here as well. Andy, I'll call her our senior ontologist, but she works with XBRL and the taxonomy design and development within our team. I'm nervous about this one. I'm not normally nervous of presenting, but it's because everybody has a view on this topic. And even when we circulated the first draft of our presentation, the number of comments coming back from people, Christophe and others, was clearly people have some very strong views. And in particular, we know that, as Christophe said, we've had elements of this before. We've talked a little bit about integrated reporting in isolation. We've talked a bit about the taxonomy design and XBRL in isolation. This is about trying to think a little bit more holistically, and if you, I guess for want of better terms, saying 20 years from now, what do you think the shape will be or should be? You know, maybe it should be 10 years, we're peeking ahead. And that might maybe help us shape the type of work and development that we're doing in both electronic filing and integrated reporting. What will happen is that Christy's going to give you a quick overview of our thinking and where we are with development of corporate reporting. I'll give you a bit of an overview of integrated reporting, and then Andy will give you a taxonomy update. And then we're going to sort of a bit of a role play. We're going to discuss some of the natural tensions between electronic filing and integrated reporting and corporate reporting principles. So, Christy.
Thanks, Alan. You did the first two slides for me, which was good. Okay, so corporate reporting is evolving. That's our assumption, and I think most people would agree with that. And we think that's impacting three areas in particular. So the content of information, so the information itself, the structure of that information, and how it's delivered. And that evolution is being primarily driven by the demands of users and being primarily met by preparers. But that's not to say that other parties aren't involved in that process as well, such as regulators and auditors. Okay, moving on to the next. So if I start with content, and there is a demand for more content by users, and what this slide is trying to show you is the range of that content. It covers more, corporate reporting covers more than what we traditionally think of as financial reporting. And as the range of those topics grow and become quite broad, the connections, the linkages between them is becoming more and more important. And that means in terms of how corporate reporting is evolving, the structure of that different type of information is also becoming important. Which leads me to my next slide. That the more that the type of content increases and the amount increases, we hear that users want that information to be better organised, expressed, and linked. And they want it to be concise and be able to get to it quickly, so it needs to be transparent. But the other thing we hear that the users want a comprehensive story. They want those linkages to pull together, for the dots to be connected. And that idea of reporting in silos is no longer something that they feel comfortable with. I think there's a view that they want to bring together the strategy, the risks, and the financial performance of the entity together. And I think the other thing is that the structure of the information also needs to enable to meet the needs of different types of users. So it needs to facilitate both that high-level summary, that story that people want at the high level, but also being able to do a deep dive into the information if that's what the user wants in that circumstance. And here we think technology can really help. And it also goes to a certain extent to how that information is delivered. So we hear, in terms of delivery, we hear that users want information to be delivered differently. So I think it's fair to say that no longer a one size or a one type of delivery meets all users' needs. In particular, and I think as standard setters, we do fall into this sometimes, that not all users want a paper-based report which they read from front to end. Some users want to access the information in financial reports or corporate reports differently. They want to be able to target or they want to be able to access in the way that they want to. So the report needs to target specific needs. For example, the customization of reports or data extracts or actually direct data feeds to regulators. And that means that the information becomes more timely and easy to access and process, and again, easy to navigate and filter. It also means that you're able to pull together a lot broader amount and range of information to give you sort of that extra add-on which is often being looked at the moment called systematic data analysis, to give you ideas of outliers or trends which might not be evident when you're looking at individual reports on a paper-based format. So if corporate reporting is evolving in some of the ways that we've just discussed there, what does that mean for the ISB, and how can the ISB respond? Could it require new content, extend what it's setting standards for, require new structures, so therefore enable linkages perhaps, or, you know, we already have work on the IFRS taxonomy, or perhaps enable better delivery or understand that information is being delivered differently? So before we sort of answer that question, perhaps it's worth reminding ourselves of what the ISB's remit currently is, which is financial reporting, so IFRS financial statements, management commentary, and I put other here because I think the boundary of what sits between that and corporate reporting is less clear. We also set standards for primary users, so investors and creditors, and they want financial information which is useful for them to make decisions about providing resources to the entity. So that's the ISB's current remit. And in particular, we thought it'd be worthwhile to highlight the role of the IFRS financial statements and the unique position that they do play in the broader sense of corporate reporting. So audited financial statements are regulated and recurring, and they're standardised and independently verified. And this provides objective and verifiable hard data, which is used to support a number of other reports outside of financial reporting. It's a foundation for further analysis. It also means that, and the thing I've put here is that duplication of information in those financial statements is becoming more and more apparent, and we do hear messages that people do not like that duplication. So what this also means for IFRS financial statements, in the sense that they're used across a broad range or as a foundation for a broad range of corporate reporting, is there's tensions put upon IFRS financial statements. So, for example, we set general purpose financial statements, but we're hearing more and more, and as we said in the earlier slides, users are wanting information that meets their needs, their specific needs. We know that there's a want from some regulators or other users to have information which is more standardised, which is more consistent, to enable them to make comparisons. Yet we also understand there's a need, and this is primarily where the ISB has come from traditionally, to provide information which is relevant, which is entity specific. IFRS financial statements have historically relied on past events or looking at history, what's happened, but more and more there seems to be a want to get information about the future, about what the entity's strategy and forecast for future activities are. And again, some people are wanting a lot more detail, so wanting, you know, going down to the sort of extensive spreadsheets and getting into the detail of financial reporting or corporate reporting, whereas others just want the summary. They just want to know the story and get that clearly. So these are tensions that are pulling on IFRS financial statements and the work of the ISB. So how could the ISB respond? And this table tries to sort of indicate possible ways of doing that. One thing the ISB could do is look at the content and start thinking about whether it should expand what it's already doing or do some more work in the area of management commentary. It may also want to look at integrated reporting and how does it incorporate integrated reporting into the work that it does. And then also might want to look more at the use of technology and how that might impact its standard setting activities. Now, we're now going to talk about those two lines, integrated reporting and technology, and Alan's going to talk about integrated reporting.
Right. Thanks, Christy. As Christy's indicated, we have increasing demands, I think, from all sorts of different regulators and others on companies to disclose more and more in different forms. It's interesting when we've met with some corporates and looked at their annual reports and how they've grown over time. A lot of the growth, particularly in the financial industry sector, is not because of things we're doing, but because of demands from regulators. And people are trying, instead of actually putting reports all over the place, trying to bring them together. So you'll actually see a lot of, for the banks, for example, as well as financial reporting requirements, you'll see some of the regulatory requirements and risk assessments built into the annual reports. So it's not surprising they're getting bigger and bigger. And of course, when one of the notes on earlier slide of Christie's was the country-by-country reporting. People came to us and said, can you add that to IFRS requirements? So we seem to be a natural group that people come to. And interestingly, you know, when we think about integrated reporting, I think the question people ask is whether it's complementary or whether it's supposed to be substituting for something. December last year, so it's only a couple of months ago, the Integrated Reporting Council released the first version of a framework for integrated reporting. So if you haven't seen it, it's a relatively easy to read document. We've had some involvement as the ISB. We have an MOU between the ISB and Integrated Reporting Council. Hans is on the council, and either Hans or Ian attend the council meetings. I'm on the working group, and I was going to say and technical task force, but one of the few things that's happened is last week it's the first time I've been involved in a group that's actually closed shop, and the task force, as I said, job done, and actually was dissolved formally last week. Olivier Servais, when he was here, was on the Connectivity Technical Collaboration Group. I was on the Materiality Group. So we've had quite a bit of involvement in helping contribute to the debates around the framework. And I guess that means led to some quite interesting questions. People have asked whether the MOU means that we're fully behind integrated reporting. How do we see it developing? Is it a competitor? Is it complementary? What's going to happen in the next 3 or 4 years? Should we be involved? How does that relate to management commentary? Because we do have a practice statement. Lots of open questions, and I think they're quite valid questions to ask as well. What I thought I would do is give you a little bit of a history of integrated reporting. They say you don't need to know the history of a bike to be able to ride one, but sometimes it helps to know a little bit about where you've actually come from. I was involved fairly early on in the process. There were meetings that were held in Clarence House, which is significant in itself because the original ideas were sponsored by Prince Charles and the Prince's Trust, where they had people together to try and were challenging traditional financial reporting. I think at those early days, a lot of the speeches you heard and from some of the original people behind it did talk about they were worried about the future and their grandchildren and so on, and it was about a sustainable planet, for example, and said we need some fundamental change. And I think that's where a lot of this came from. The idea was to create a framework that you could use to prepare a report essentially that showed the trade-offs between some of the financial decisions you make and other factors, so that if you are using up or consuming resources at the expense of something else, that was highlighted. And people have embraced that in a sense in quite different ways. If anybody's read the Puma annual reports, they try to quantify a lot of their the way that they relate to the environment, for example. Others have not gone near as far as that. But I think as the project developed, and I should emphasise, these are my observations of the project. I think others would have a different view. But I think as it developed, it was clear that a lot of mainstream investors were not going to buy into this whole idea. It was almost like too far off the way we report currently. And when they were trying to get a lot of buy-in, there wasn't a great demand for this sort of undescribed, sustainable reporting. So I think what happened is over time, it slowly started to morph into something more mainstream. And I think there was an acknowledgement as we went through that it wasn't just about a sustainable planet, but it was about the sustainable models of a business. And I use some examples in there, such as if you're a pharmaceutical company and your business model is to develop and nurture your own R&D to develop new drugs, another one doesn't have its own R&D, but its model is to go and acquire startups to try and feed through its supply chain. Is that a more sustainable business model between one or the other? The way you develop, you've got intellectual property, for example. Is that a sustainable model, or others going to eat into your intellectual property? You're in an oil exploration company, and you're going out and just exploiting oil, for example, or have you got some other alternative fuels that you're developing? How sustainable is your particular model? So it's not just about environment, but often it's about the way you actually produce your goods, whether, for example, you're using factories in third world countries or developing countries where you've got very, very cheap labour. Is that sustainable in the long term? Things like that. So I think it went away from being just about mainly environmental sustainability to a much broader base. And if you read through the framework, you'll see that that's characterised by identifying what they consider to be the six capitals. It's an idea that's been around quite a long time. I think some of the firms have been, there's a thing called value reporting, which reflects a lot of very similar ideas. And without oversimplifying it, the idea is to look about, are you a good corporate citizen? Okay. So in other words, if you're polluting or pouring pollution into streams, for example, you're probably not a good corporate citizen. How well are you looking after natural resources? What about the people you've employed? What sort of intellectual property are you able to develop and control? And then obviously the financial capital as well. So there are lots of different variables that drive business, in other words, create value. And the idea of integrated reporting was to try and bring all of those things together. I did some work quite a long time ago with a company in New Zealand called Watercare Services. And one example I think can be helpful is that there was a sewage pipeline that they managed that was actually built over a very nice bay, sort of a beach area within New Zealand. So it was an eyesore. But they did some costings, and in their annual report, they indicated how much it would increase the cost of sewage processing to every person who was a customer of theirs to actually take that and bury it and take it out of sight. So there's a trade-off between the visual eyesore and the cost to actual consumers. So in a way, they're saying, you make a choice. And in the end, they actually buried the pipe at quite a large cost, and people actually paid more for the processing. But there was a kind of a trade-off between those two things. And I think that's really what the idea of integrated reporting is to try and look at trade-offs between different variables. Now, what is an integrated report? Is it a great big huge long thing? We've got some people from Bruce is from South Africa, and in South Africa they've actually introduced that as a requirement for listing entities. The idea, and the group when we're together is not about producing a bright line, but the idea was supposed to be it was succinct. You know, people had in mind 30 to 50 pages as opposed to a 500 page report. It was supposed to be succinct. You know, the front end of a you might call an annual report. So if you think of management commentary or MD&A. As we see it today, it's the front end in a sense. But they want more discipline about that because they don't want to just have management telling you what a nice year they've had, for example, and telling them a bit of a story about their business. They want to have an open story, and they want to see how all of these variables actually relate to each other. So it's supposed to be succinct, and it's also supposed to be not an additional report. So, for example, in South Africa, it wasn't supposed to be you've got your annual report and we want you to produce an integrated report as well. It was supposed to be substituting, in a sense, or replacing one of the existing reports. It was some of the other things that I think integrated reporting are not about, and that, or I should say what it is about, I guess, it's about cash flows to me. A lot of people were saying that an integrated report is about making investment decisions based on non-financial information. The way the model has actually been put together in the framework, in my mind, and some of the working group would have a slightly different view, it's just about all about cash flows. And the idea is that, and we see examples of these today, when the technical task force was meeting, the Starbucks, how much tax they were paying in the UK, blew up. And for those not familiar, there was a report that Starbucks were paying very, very low amount of tax in the UK relative to their profit base. And one of the reactions to that was that people actually did stop going and buying coffee at Starbucks, for a short term anyway. So it had an effect directly on their cash flows. We see reports, for example, of people with they're developing and outsourcing the clothing, for example, to third world countries, and they find, you hear terrible stories about things that are happening in their factories, people walk away. So it has a real impact or effect on their cash flows in terms of their revenue streams. In a similar way, if you're actually utilising oil reserves, for example, and they dry up, then obviously that's going to affect your cash flows as well. The idea of integrated reporting was simply to try and, I think, bring more rigour to identifying the factors that ultimately affect the cash flows that a business is able to generate. Now, and a side ancillary part of this, and probably a very important side effect, is for those who are interested in making what people might consider to be good corporate investment, in other words, they prefer to invest in entities that are good corporate citizens, this information will help them as well. But ultimately, when the framework was designed, it was about investors making investment decisions with an entity and making sure that they anticipated and challenged and asked questions about how sustainable their business model was. Okay? And I think that's quite a big difference from where it started off, which was essentially with environmental reporting, I think, at its core. So, where now? We're going to ask some of the questions we're going to think about, and we want you to think about as well, is what's the future? Is that integrated reporting? Should the Integrated Reporting Council evolve and take over reporting, and what does it mean for us? And perhaps we're going to have a look at technology now, and then come back and we're going to have a brief discussion about some of those factors.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about the role of technology in corporate reporting. Some of it will be familiar for things you have seen happening on people's websites now, and some of it is a bit more speculative. There are some familiar and not so familiar words on this slide. Some of them are around for a while, some of them are quite new. They're all technologies that may or affect corporate reporting or could be used to help with various aspects of corporate reporting, especially with regards to delivery and also with structuring that data and making use of it for analysis purposes. So one of the most important things that we hear about, especially when we're talking about taxonomy, is that structure is very important for computer-readable data. The computers do not have the same ability to read implicit context that human beings do. So they can't look at a full corporate report and automatically know everything about that report from context. They can't see the implicit data. So it's necessary when building something for a computer to read to enable it to do analysis, we have to start stating everything explicitly. This means, for example, there are circumstances when, say, somebody's reporting cash. Companies give up many, many different labels for cash. Some of the analysis done on the SEC reporting revealed, I can't remember the exact figure, but it was somewhere around 100 or so different ways of putting the same figure on a financial report. Now, a computer isn't going to be able to look at all those different terms for cash and know that every one of them definitely does mean cash. Whereas a human can look at it and go, well, I have experience, I've spent time reading these reports, I know when this company puts that label down, it means the same thing as this company with this different label. So this is where the structuring of data comes in and where tagging is important. The other thing that this structuring allows us to do is add formal definitions. So as well as saying that this thing is cash, as well as allowing us to pick up the date of the report, allowing us to say what currency the report is in, putting that all in a way that a computer can pick up, is it allows us to define what the items mean and give more definition associated directly with the item. Now, this might be the kind of definition a computer needs to function, so it might be whether or not it's a concept that's reported over the duration of a report, or whether it's reported for an instant in time. Or it might be something more like the general precision of the figure and how accurately somebody's reported it. Most of this information is already there in a paper report. It's not so much a matter of trying to pull out information that doesn't exist. It's just often in some cases that information is, even when people are reading it, they don't necessarily consciously know it's there. A lot of it is based on their experience. The delivery of this information, again, because we need this extra structure, we need this extra explicit information for computer systems, this is where some of the terms come in with EDI, electronic data interchange, which is a very old format involving fixed-length strings. We have XML. People were looking at XML and realizing that maybe that structure was a bit too limited for annual reports and corporate financial reporting, and that's where XBRL came in, which you'll know we already work on with our taxonomy. XBRL has the added features that what it allows is for extra terms that are not previously defined within a system to be added by an entity. So entities can add their own items, they provide the definitions for those items, and then despite the fact they may exist only in that one annual report in the whole world, there's still some information there for a computer to be able to handle them, process them, and maybe even add them into analysis. So an example of this would be, say, a company adding in extra classes of assets. For its asset breakdowns. Taxonomies themselves are much bigger than just belonging to XBRL. A taxonomy is just a dictionary, a classification list of terms. So obviously it's possible to manage and run a taxonomy that is not directly associated with the delivery format. So XML, EDI, as well as providing structure, these are all about passing information back and forth. A taxonomy itself can provide information that's not tied to that delivery format, and then we get into standards like ontology, which are not tied at all to the delivery format. So they're all about the definitions in the background. So I think one way of looking at an ontology is it's kind of a computer-readable conceptual framework. It's there to provide the definitions for what the items actually mean, which allows things to pick up and say, this thing is an asset, I don't need to know this for processing, but I know roughly how assets relate to liabilities and equities. I know that these are all forms of claims. And that this information can then be used for some of the cleverer computer processing, which starts to try and behave more like a human. It starts to try and make and pick out some of that implicit information. And that maybe helps with more of the longer-term reporting and trying to reduce the load of having to have structure and explicit information in computer formats. And, of course, once we've got structured data, then we start to be able to do things about it. And the most visible way for this is a lot that most people will be able to see is web-based reporting and what can be done with web technologies once we have structured data. So we have the ability to start producing dynamic formats. We can start to be able to make reports something that can be customized, something that people can build views on, something where somebody can say, I want to take these figures and I want a chart, and I want to be able to have a graph of what those figures actually mean. And I have now seen people's websites actually start to do this kind of thing. Mostly in sort of sections of investor website. And it's because the structure is there, it's because what these figures are is actually defined. Websites tend to be persistent. People will leave their historical data up there. It's very easy for analysts to go and get the last 10 reports from somebody's website. That's a very human thing, but often the history is also there in more automated feeds. We keep the paper when we look online. Most places still have a PDF download. And a PDF is effectively just an electronic form of paper. It doesn't provide much more information than paper, but computers are still not a very friendly way to read. So many people will still take that and print it out to enable them to actually have a look through themselves and to do their own personal analysis. But also, because we're online, we can have links between that and the actual data. So we can have the ability to, for somebody to take their summary and to go home and read it. We also have ability for a different user to come in and say, I want the detailed data on this section. Can I download a spreadsheet of those figures? Can I download a custom feed of those figures? Both can be available and both can be linked so that it's possible to go from one point in a summary to the correct point in a disclosure or a general, some kind of spreadsheet or other note giving the actual breakdown figures. And of course, one of the things that already happens and you will have seen is that we have direct feeds and we have reports, and these include submitting things across systems to regulatory websites, or via other mechanisms into regulatory systems. So we're talking back to the whole messaging system where literally all the format does is go from one computer to another. Everything from feeds which are actually providing the data out from a website to any user that wants to subscribe and pick up that data. I don't know if any of you use RSS feeds, but there are various web formats that already do that kind of thing as well. And there's no real reason that places shouldn't try and pick up this information for themselves. So, for example, Google has a thing called Freebase, which is a large database of information it scrapes from the internet about entities. So if you search for a person or if you search for a company and you see that little box next to your Google search results, which is their first best guess at who it is, and you see the little snippets of information, it picks all that up from Wikipedia, from the company website, and it's also starting to pick up the financials. And it's going to, for some, where it can, it'll pick up the financials from published XBRL reports, so that it has the correct figures, and where it can't, it'll try and pick them up from somewhere else. So that was a quick whiz through some of the ways that technology can be used. I think I now pass back to Christy. Yes.
So now we're going to look again at integrated reporting, and as Alan mentioned, we've got a couple of questions that I'll sort of pose to Alan and maybe draw out perhaps what the role of the ISB may or may not be in terms of moving forward with integrated reporting. So, Alan, the first of these questions is, what do you expect an integrated report to look like? Because I know one of the questions that I had and I saw in a lot of the information about integrated reporting was just that. And would you expect actually the integrated report to replace what reporting is existing at the moment?
I think one of the interesting ideas for integrated reporting is that there are quite a few people who think that we should take management commentaries that exists, or the front end of the annual report, the director's report or the statements up front, and that should be morphed into a more disciplined annual report. If you have the opportunity, if you want to read our practice statement on management commentary, it actually uses the word integrated 6 times in there. And in many ways, we refer not as in such a structured or formal way to a lot of things like environmental reports and things like that, or environmental factors that might affect the performance of an entity in the longer term. So some actually think that what we should do is, and this is the idea of it being substitutive or rather than an additional report, is that we should try and give more discipline to the front end of the report. And so management commentary or MD&A, for example, could actually end up being an integrated report. And I think that's an interesting idea, because if you take that to an extreme, it almost means that the Integrated Reporting Council might not ultimately have a long-term future. But I think there are some on the Integrated Reporting Council who think that's the right idea. The idea is to get this concept embedded in normal reporting, and then they can say job done. So, you know, I think that's one of the debating areas. There are others who'd say no, Integrated Reporting Council should continue to exist in its own form, and if anything, it replaces some of the work that we're doing, for example. So I think that's, I don't know if that sort of help shape what it looks like, but it's, I think I mentioned it's about a 30 to 40 page document, maybe 100, and maybe substituting.
Because I know when we were discussing it in part of this presentation, we were unclear whether it was a change in content or was it a change in delivery, in structure, and I think it could actually be both to a certain extent. The second question I had, and this is something that came up a lot in the discussion forum that we had on disclosures and also in the survey that we did with that, is that users and people looking at corporate reporting and at financial reporting don't like duplication or unnecessary duplication of information. And what are we doing to try and, react to that? I sort of see these different pools on financial reporting, meaning that we're just going to keep repeating the same information in different reports. Do you have a response?
It's an unfair question, although I knew it was coming. This is a hard one because, as I said before, you've got a lot of regulators, for example, are requiring particular information. The most that we can do, I think, in terms of duplication is to, as we currently do now, is we actually talk with other regulators. And we've had sessions with our own board of in terms of financial reporting. Sorry, the financial sector, for example. And talking about their disclosure requirements. But in the case of, I guess, integrated reporting and management commentary in particular, for those who know the history of management commentary, it's actually quite challenging depending on which jurisdiction you're in, because we've got the SEC here, and the SEC look after MD&A, the FASB in the US look after financial statements and the associated notes. You go to other jurisdictions, and they have, they bring the whole lot together so that the management commentary, or MD&A, and the financial statements are actually just part of corporate reporting requirements for one organisation to set. And we know that there's some work being done, I think, by the FASB to try and identify duplication between MD&A and the financial reports to try and eliminate some of that duplication. There are no magic answers here. What we can do, I guess, as the ISB, is that if we had management commentary, as we do, sitting over the top of financial reports, we can actually look at making sure there's no duplication and they actually work together. But this is one of the barriers to getting this internationally, is that every jurisdiction's got slightly different way of thinking about that. You know, it's a bit like when we talk a bit about technology with Andy about, well, let's just stick things onto the web. Well, not every jurisdiction allows you to stick things onto the web, for example. And I think that's a little bit the same with the management commentary.
And I think the other thing we can look at, that we are going to look at as part of the disclosure initiative, and the ISB has already done, is the use of cross-referencing. And they've actually explicitly mentioned that in the hedging standards. So I know that companies are already utilising that ability in their financial reports, and we need to look at that further if we should extend or enable companies or continue to do that. Alan, the final question for you is, if integrated reporting perhaps would be supported in our management commentary or something we'd look at doing, does that mean that the ISB would need to set standards that would cover things like environmental or social reporting?
I think the short answer to that is no. We don't have a comparative advantage in setting standards for what I call the building blocks of measuring environmental performance or factors or social responsibility or intellectual property. All those, there are actually other organisations that do that. I think the Integrated Reporting Council recognise that as well. The financial reporting, I think, is going to be the backbone or the centre column of just about all corporate reporting anyway. And then there are other factors. You know, the ISB, for example, and the IFRS Foundation, environmental impact is not big for us. Our biggest, if you think about our sustainable business model, it's about our funding, for example, and it's about our maintaining the intellectual capital within here, the people that we actually have creating standards, for example. They're the things that are most important to us. And so it does vary across the place. And I'm the last person to sit there and say, well, I think I know how to measure some good KPIs or indicators on managing intellectual property, for example. Others are better able to do that. This is where it links to technology, is that as long as they're interoperable or you're using a common standard to try and grab the data, then others can create the building blocks in their own environment, and it all comes together in an integrated report. The question is, who should be the keeper of the integrated report? Should it be us, for example, IIRC, or somebody completely different?
Okay, thanks, Alan. I'm now going to pass over to...
Before we move on, I that's an excellent summary, Alan, on the integrated reporting. It's something that CalPERS thinks is extremely important, but I think there's a bit missing in the account. I think you're touching on it, which is the standard setting piece, because there's been a huge range of recommended guidelines. I think quite a confusing collection of recommended practices for companies, which investors have struggled to make any sense of because they're not connected to the financials and they don't come out in a timely manner, they're not assured, they're not necessarily material or relevant. They don't meet the basic quality tests that we expect for the financials. But there is an initiative, and I think from our point of view on the investor front, what is now critical, with now that we have this integrated framework, which we are great fans of, we think it's a tremendous step forward, and Paul Druckmann and his team are doing a great job. What we now want is robust standards on the forms of capital that are not financial. We think there are three, being old-fashioned economics types. There's human capital and there's physical capital. And we want to see rigorous standards of materiality to express what matters in reporting for physical and for human capital. And I think the group that started quite recently in this arena, the Sustainable Accounting Standards Board, which has got a house in Harvard and one in San Francisco, is working hard with groups of investors and companies to shake out a dozen or so materiality standards by sector. We think this is a really important initiative. And if it doesn't get connected to this integrated reporting framework, we'll still be in the world of, all manner of different interest groups and NGOs with their heart in the right place, but urging, everything from molecule reporting, let's have carbon, to others that have supply chain standards. We want all of this pulled together. So CalPERS sits on the Standards Council for that group. It may or may not be appropriate for them to have an MOU or a relationship with the IASB, but it seems to us that they are your counterpart in the US, at least, for thinking about, for actually doing the work on developing the standards that would naturally fit together with the financial standards that you're responsible for.
Just very brief response to that, too, is you're right, the Integrated Reporting Council itself does not set standards at all. They just tell us what integrated means. And that rely on us to set the financial, and others like GRI, for example, the Carbon Initiative and Wiki and others to try and get measures, and they're kind of like the building blocks. And you're right, we need robustness around the standards, and then the question is, who's the keeper that tries to bring them all together and ensures that there is that credibility in the measures?
So the question is, have you reviewed what the SASB is doing? Because the other existing standards are directed at companies or individual items.
Brief answer is no, we haven't. We're aware of the group and the membership and some of the people involved and some of the work they've done, but we haven't done a systematic review.
Well, we'd be glad to help with that if it's of interest. We think it fills a gap.
Okay, moving to technology. Andy, I hear that imposing a taxonomy is all about giving to structure. Structured to data. How does that play with this idea that the view that people want the story and telling a story, and does that impede that?
Well, unsurprisingly, this is a question we get asked all the time. Basically, it's true that a lot of what I was talking about is that in order for a computer to be able to handle data properly, in order for people to be able to analyze it properly, that structure and explicit information is very important. But I don't think this necessarily contradicts with the idea that what people want to do is produce their own items, their own story, and their own narrative explanation. Technology is rapidly improving, and quite a few of the things that we see actually can help with this, and in fact can help with the conflict between the two goals. So at the moment, one of the concerns that we've heard is that too many figures, too much information, this is drowning the story. Things are becoming form-based, they're becoming very compliance-based. And one of the things that could possibly be done is to allow that information to still exist and for it information to be clearly defined and to link it back to the story to get the figures in the story the background that they need for compliance purposes as well. It's to enable sort of the both types of report to exist at once and to allow us to link between them and to give us the structure to filter that content. So if somebody wants that story, they only want the high-level figures, it's then very easy for them to say, okay, I want this sort of more lightly structured section. I want the more narrative bits. But if it's a user coming in who says, okay, I've read through that, I've seen this summary figure, what's really important to me now is the data behind that figure. It's there, it's structured, and it's clear. And more precisely, they have a link back to it. They don't have to go and dig it out themselves. Nobody has to rummage through a piece of paper or a PDF. All they have to do is say, right, I've taken this very lightly structured section of the report, and I've grabbed a link that says this is related to this data. This is the stuff you need if you're that person who really wants to do the analysis. So it's not so much that technology has to force structure on all of a report is that it helps provide and give that structure where it's needed and provide links to be able to access it from the story.
The other question that we often get is technology just an enabler or does it actually change content?
Well, obviously what I was talking about there was very much the enabling kind of technology. That was the situation where we've got some existing content desires and we're using technology to make those possible for those conflicts and those desires to exist at the same time and for people to be able to use them in a hopefully a more efficient manner. But I don't think it is true that technology is just an enabler. That's not what it does anymore. It's not a thing that is just bolted on the end of a process and everything else carries on as normal. For me, technology is very much something that can help with the definition of the content and it can help look at the content. And I think my best example for this is things like ontology and things like the work we do to define taxonomy. When we go through and we produce these explicit definitions and we go through and we discuss in detail what it is that makes up an asset, what it is when we try and produce the more explicit models that a computer needs to understand something, then the discussions produce a lot of, they draw out all the things that we assume when we're working as human beings. They pull them all out into explicit definitions. They give us a background rigor and they give us a very structured definition that then means that when somebody's looking at that content in future, they have something very clear to work from. And I think, personally, I find that modelling process, that pulling everything together and explicitly defining the relationships can make quite a big difference to how people think about something that that has never actually been written down and defined before.
Mm-hmm. Andy, if I can just ask you a question. So does this mean that in the process of creating the taxonomy that you basically find that some of the concepts that we use are a little bit fuzzy and in the process of translating it into taxonomy, you come up with clearer definitions? Is that what you're basically saying?
Basically, yeah. At different levels as well. So for taxonomy, we're looking at the disclosure level. We're looking very much at the things that are physically reported. And we do sometimes find when we're doing that work that what has been written in the English language for a disclosure that made perfect sense to the team that were writing it, if somebody else looks at it from a computer-based point of view and says, right, that means if I was trying to analyze this, I'd want to produce a table, I'm going to want it to have these columns, and takes it back. Sometimes these things don't quite match. And at the higher level, there's looking at the conceptual framework, and there's trying to say, well, if I had to try and describe something as woolly and as fluffy as just what an asset is to a computer, what am I actually going to put down? And that those some of those discussions, I think, are also very interesting, and they can help sort of clear up packages of the word other
When you discover this fuzziness, then do you give feedback to the technical staff? Hey, you're being a little bit fuzzy?
For disclosures especially, yes.
Okay.
So two things that we've done internally is Andy's actually, we have these little meetings between the concepts team and Andy and others to try and bring discipline to our discussions about conceptual framework. And that's proved to be really valuable because, you know, as Hans said, when you bring developing an ontology or even thinking about taxonomies, it's an old discipline. People understand about giving structure to things. And Andy frightened me about a year ago when she said she was going to have a look at our standards and try to get some sort of structure and consistency of thinking about the standards. I said, don't go there. You'll find how bad it is. Because historically, you know, they've evolved over time. They're not that bad by any means, but they have evolved over time, different people writing, and you don't get that discipline that I think that we've had by bringing the team together. And then at a standard-by-standard level, the ontology team and the taxonomy team actually have a look at all of our disclosure requirements to make sure they're consistent the way they're structured and developed. So, and they feed into each other. It's not the technology driving the standards. It's more the giving structure to the data to make it much easier to think about applying more consistency.
And that's done at the moment, when a technical staff member is creating a disclosure in an ED phase, they will work with the taxonomy team. So it's not that we get the disclosure after it's been finalised by the board. We actually use it in the development. And we find that that interaction really makes it very clear what information set you're asking for in the disclosure requirement. And I think, so let me move on to the last question, because I'm running out of time. the other thing that we often hear is, why are we making these XBRL instance files? Why are we doing all this tagging when you can actually get most of that information electronically online anyway in a PDF format? There's a sense that people aren't using the XBRL tag documents. What's your response to that question?
Well, first is my usual response to anybody suggesting that a PDF counts as electronic reporting. The problem I have with PDF is that whilst it provides a lovely printable format and it gives all the formatting structure, it doesn't give very much data structure. Now, I do acknowledge that for annual reports and corporate reporting especially, that formatting structure actually can matter. It can provide really useful information. And the aim is not to try and lose PDF and not to try and lose the fact that that formatting contains information, but to try and provide that structure in other ways and define it and model it so that when a report goes from this PDF into something more structured, that structure still contains the fact that some of those, the orders matter, some of those classes of this is an important item, this is not an important item, actually are relevant, and that the order on that sheet of effectively electronic paper actually still means something. Now, the reason for all the tagging is sort of the kind of thing I was talking about earlier. It's that once something is explicitly defined, then instead of having to rummage through and do the analysis ourselves, we can get computers to help us out with that. And we do often hear that in various places XBRL has been implemented, the tagging is there. It doesn't have to be XBRL. It could be any other kind of applying this to a financial statement. It could be one of the other delivery formats. But are people really using it? And at the moment, I would sort of agree that the main users are probably the regulators. They're the people who do get the most benefit out of this at the moment, because they're the people who are requesting for this information, and then they're the people who are using it for the data processing. But there are other applications starting to use it. As I mentioned earlier, there is Google Freebase, and that is starting to think about pulling in XBRL to add to its big scrape of knowledge on everything on the internet, which is a bit worrying. And there's also things like there are now investor tools that are starting to be seen. There was one that was featured in CFA magazine not too long ago. And they really are starting to understand that they can start to do more interesting things with this information.
Can I ask you a question, Andy? Because one that comes up a lot. Surely you say you're going to give the structure of the data. It must be much easier with the US GAAP taxonomy, because they've got 18,000 elements and we've got, what, 4,500 or something? So isn't that better?
The size of the taxonomy is an interesting one, because it's actually, I could say in the case of IFRS and US GAAP, it's because the taxonomy designs are different. But I did some analysis, and that's not actually true. The US GAAP and the IFRS taxonomy do have very similar modelling plans. When we put together whether something should be a table or whether something should be a reportable item, we do actually think about it in very similar ways, at least from looking at it from a number and an analysis point of view. But what I think is the major reason that those two taxonomies are so different in size isn't that one is more usable than the other, it's where they started from. So the US GAAP taxonomy had decades of financial reporting to draw on. It had company reports after company report, it had practice, it had very clear statements about a very wide range of disclosures that could possibly be used. And it made an extremely good effort to try to cover all that practice, to cover all that disclosure. Whereas the IFRS taxonomy, we started building from the other direction. So we started building it from the standards and from the examples in the standards, and adding only, and we have sort of an analysis process that builds in common practice as it is commonly used. So we didn't start off with all of the practice. We're adding in the practice as we see it being used. And because some of the standards are relatively new, quite a bit of that turns out to be a smaller number of items, or we discover that items are used at first, and then a couple of years later people decide they're no longer appropriate. So I think what we see is that the two taxonomies will start to drift towards some ideal point in the middle, which is the number of items that are actually used in corporate reporting. Or at least I hope so, anyway.
Okay. I'm also conscious of time, but we just wanted a couple of things to summarise. There's clearly a natural tension between... you've had that for a while. I'll ask a question in a second. There's clearly a lot of tension between storytelling and structuring data that we're quite aware of and conscious of and trying to deal with as well. And maybe thinking about where we're heading ultimately in the future, the sorts of things that I think that would be helpful to discuss, maybe the future of corporate reporting is to ultimately have the storytelling in, say, an integrated report, and then that's supported by a lot of data, for example, that's much easier to stick onto websites and to tag and to have some sort of structure around, for example. So I think it's a fairly open question that we're asking, because ultimately we want to make sure that we put our resources and effort into those things that are going to be fruitful. So if we anticipate that we're heading that way, when in fact you all think we should be heading that way, then it's actually helpful to know. So that's what the sessions were. But I think there's at least one question here.
As a preparer, I would say that from a technological point of view, it's not a problem to produce this integrated report, because we have information, we have technology, no problem. I think the main problem is how to audit it. Because if... because everything is about risks. And, for example, I agree with you that a lot of information which investors need, not financial information. And when we meet with investors, first question is your president is going to run business? Not about financials. How's his health? And how to audit this information? I don't know. We can gather all information about our company, and I can expect even some section about rumors about us. No problem. But how to audit this? And first question. And second question, I found that investors actually do not need this information in one place. They can get information from newspaper, from rumors, from anyway. What the purpose to gather this information in one set?
Okay.
Social responsibilities, so on.
Okay, the two issues there, and I've got an auditor sitting very close to me. The Integrated Reporting Council has a working group thread that looks at the audit implications. We had the same issue when we focused on management commentary. And my quite a simplistic answer is you're looking for consistency with the way a company actually operates. So while it might be some forward-looking information, for example, about the what their plans are, you want those plans to be consistent with what they actually discussed at the board table. So sometimes the assurance that you're getting is not about, yes, those plans are going to take place, but it's about consistency of the way people think and so on. And I know the auditing firms have done quite a bit of work on this as well, and there are cases where we have seen, for example, in South Africa, I think, you know, the integrated reports are signed off. And so you can actually, there are people who are actually giving audit assurance to integrated reports in some forms. The second thing is one place is usually about telling one story in an integrated way. The threads you get in the newspapers and the press will be threads. You want to hear the story is told by the business, how it's been governed and so on, and how the things fit together. So that's why I think integrated reporting is supposed to be in one place.
Before we move to breakout sessions, just to be clear, discussions on how should the ISB respond to all this is one of the explicit questions for the breakout sessions. But if there are any questions before we go to breakout, I'm happy to take some. Suya.
Thank you, Christophe. I think, Alan, I was quite pleased to hear you say that the view on sustainability is a business view as opposed to an environmental view, and I think that'll give a lot of comfort to many people. The challenge, of course, is any time you do this view on sustainability, there's always an assumption that's other things remaining equal, which we all know is never the case. I mean, even in today's disclosures, we have risk sensitivity, for example, in a bank on 100 basis point shift in interest rates will do this to the earnings. The reality is that never drops to the earnings fully. You give some of it away to the customer or you balance some of it in some other way. And how then do you get around this other things remaining equal issue rather than paint a doomsday picture is something that I would just request you to consider as you go along.
Oh, no, I thought it was more a statement. Did you want to respond to that? No, I think we will take it into consideration. And I think actually what I'd really like is that sort of same topic to be discussed in the feed, in the breakout sessions, because one of the things about this presentation is it's not covering everything, and we could never have covered every single topic that could have been in this presentation. So we understand there'll be lots of suggestions in addition to what we've done here, so we'd be very interested to hear what those are in the feedback.
I actually would have one question for Andy. You said that digital reporting requires predefined structures, or as you said, things must be explicitly defined. Now, over the last year or two, we've discussed here on how can we get back from a check-the-box reporting, and whether a principle-based disclosure approach wouldn't be better, rather than asking people like, I'll provide a segmentation of this number by this or that criterion, rather go like, hey, provide a segmentation by a criterion that you think is important. Is there a dilemma between a principle-based disclosure approach and digital reporting?
There is a bit of one, yes. I mean, there is a reasonably obvious conflict that people notice, that when trying to produce something that is a structured report, it's trying to tie down what should be reported and make things explicit. But on the other hand, technology is improving, and quite a few of the features of various of the systems that we're now using are more about trying to cope with when people want to create that extra information. So XBRL allows someone else to define it. So when a company is reporting and it wants to do the breakdown in a different fashion, it provides a mechanism to say, okay, we don't know in our original taxonomy, we haven't tried to specify what that breakdown might be, but what we'll let you do is let you tell us in such a way that it still can be read by a computer. So you still define it, and you provide the ability for the computer to consume that. And that's one possible approach. And another one, of course, is instead to give the computer more of the background information, so more from the ontology, and also still from a taxonomy, but a bit of a broader, more applicable taxonomy for different flexible purposes, or maybe by profiles, or maybe by users. I mean, these are all things that can be discussed. And then use the fact that we've defined everything clearly to allow it to derive its own analysis from the report. So the structure is more in the background. But there are a number of possible ways of doing this, and they're all still being explored.
Peter?
Sorry, I'm going to ask you a question based on pure and utter ignorance, so I apologize for this. But one of the greatest, if not the greatest, input for a lot of corporations is labor. We haven't talked about that. Are there any recent conversations you've had with any of these integrated reporting groups or anything where there's a more of a call for improving the way you report about your labor?
Yeah, that's... give you a formal response, that's one of the capitals in a sense, and there are two ways to think about it. One is the intellectual capital, which you separate from the actual people, hopefully, and protect, and the other is the way you look after your employees. And so they treat those as being two separate capitals. It's the human and the intellectual. We always struggled a little bit with that because sometimes they're quite difficult to separate, because the way you look after employees, you can think of it in a manufacturing environment about accident rates and things like that, health rates, the way that they physically work. In another case, it's about, I like to think about the IFRS Foundation, we employ obviously the smartest, best people possible, and how you make them stay in the organisation so that you get good standards coming out. So in a way, the way you look after the people is important, but also the way you then develop and nurture and keep your intellectual property is also part of that process as well. And there are groups like Wiki, for example, who are trying to get measures of we'll call it human capital, but the human resources, how to measure those things about in a social responsible way, for example, as well as in the intellectual capital side of it. And that's the idea. You know, we need to have good, robust measures. It's not just individual measures, but also if when you push down one place, what happens to the other? In other words, how these... looking after people and relates to financial capital, for example, and so on. In other words, you know, one of the easiest things to do is, and we always pick on the banking sector, but the bonuses, for example, what people want to do is understand how bonuses relate to performance. They actually want to understand those relationships. And in a way, that's a simple example of, you know, you're looking after your people and how that might ultimately generate more financial wealth.
All right, so let's...